It's 107.7 The Bone, baby Huey and Chasta here. And Chasta, I think it's safe to say you and I are the resident experts of all things hard rock and metal for 107.7 The Bone.
Yeah, for sure.
And so as I think all the listeners know, we have this really cool Levi's Lounge upstairs from our radio station.
Yeah.
And on June 20th, we're doing a very special screening of a documentary you and I both have seen and loved for
and
years. Absolutely.
Yep.
And actually, for listeners right now, if they go to 107.7thebone.com, go to the contest page, they can enter to win for a chance to come to this special screening and watch it. It's called Get Thrash, the story of Thrash Metal. And so, Chasta, we have a very special guest on the line.
Yeah, we're lucky enough to have the director of Get Thrash, Rick Ernst, on the line. Thank you, Rick, for calling in.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
That is awesome. And so we appreciate you making the time today. And so let's just jump right into it. We have so many questions just because.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Chasta, for me personally, I grew up here in the Bay Area. I love metal. So my heart is very close and dear to the thrash metal scene. Chasta has lived here for a long time now, and so a lot of our mutual friends are people who were part of that scene.
Have educated me over the years.
Absolutely. Yeah. So for anyone who might have not heard originally about this documentary, Get Thrash, how would you just kind of explain it to someone?
You know, basically it's the story of thrash metal. It's the, you know, I always say when people ask what's thrash metal, you could give them like Rain and Blood and that would be it.
Yes.
Yeah.
This would be the video accompaniment to that, you know, just hand them this movie. And it's about the sights, the sounds, the music, and kind of the feeling, of the thrash metal scene from the 1980s into the 90s as well. But, I think, you know, when people have seen the film, they say that they not only see what it was like and hear what it was like through the music of the bands, but it's kind of a dirty, grungy film, you know, and people can feel it a little bit. You know, they can feel the energy level, you know, through the music, the interviews, and also a lot of the old footage, you know, the classic 80s VHS footage somebody snuck into the show and filmed. Much of it in the Bay Area. You guys had very good cameras going on back in the 80s.
Oh, yeah. So metal, rock in general, but metal is kind of branched into this, like, family tree of so many different rock and roll genres, right? And I always kind of laugh about why there's so many, but why specifically is your heart in thrash? Why did you choose thrash metal to make a documentary about?
Thrash metal was the soundtrack to my growing up, my teenage years, you know, and that's it was there for me in tough times and good times, and it's just part of who I am. You know, at one point, you know, one of the band members says it's part of their DNA, and I think that's what it is. It's just part of my DNA, you know. As much as I love AC/DC and Black Sabbath, you know, those bands were a little bit older than me. So when I would go to a thrash metal show at a small club or eventually at an arena, these were guys that were sort of the same age as me. And I could relate to what they were saying. I could relate to where they were in their life, you know, because that could be me. That could be me up there.
Yeah.
You know, in a lot of ways, they were, you know, they didn't wear fancy outfits and stuff. They went up there in jeans and a t-shirt and they kicked ass. They
were just totally raw. It's funny that you say that because my husband grew up in the Bay Area thrash metal scene in the 80s. He's a musician and has been since he was six. But
Jealous.
Yeah, I know, right? But last night we were having this conversation over dinner because I was teaching my one-year-old son about thrash metal. I put in the DVD and we were rocking out. But I started playing Violence and my husband literally got teary-eyed. Like he was like, you don't understand how many of my Bay Area like memories are wrapped up in these bands. He got so passionate and emotional about thrash. It was so cute.
It really hits home for the people that grew up with that music. Again, it's really hard to explain it other than to say you had to be there and hopefully Get Thrash gets as close as you can to being there outside of a time machine, which I hear they're working on.
For sure.
Yes. Doc Brown is on the case.
Yes, he is.
But so, Rick, I mean, for anyone who's listening and, you know, the fact that Chas and I referenced this in past tense, that we've seen it already. So this documentary, I remember when it came out originally in 2008, we bought it, enjoyed it ever since then. But the big thing you guys are doing is you re-released it actually just a couple days ago. So it's out now. You go to Amazon, go to GetThrash.com for all the details. And we encourage everyone to go out and buy it now, this re-release version. But so for anyone just curious, is there what's new on the re-release of it?
The release is just the same. It's the distribution that's different. I mean, Sony's okay. put it out now, so hopefully we're going to be able to reach more people. You know, I was thinking when it first came out that, you know, everybody who is a metalhead has to have bought this film and seen it or heard of it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I've been talking to people and doing a few other interviews, and people have said, I've never heard of it before, and I don't have it. I'm definitely going to go out and buy it, which was news to me because I thought that we, you know, got the word out, you know, years ago, but apparently we didn't. So, you know, the hope is that it's the same film, but hopefully it's introduced to a new audience, you know, whether it's on Amazon and it's a hard copy or whether it's digitally, which mm-hmm. we had a little bit more difficult back in 2008 releasing it digitally.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is like the Decline of Western Civilization was a movie that I loved growing up.
Yes.
And it drove me nuts that I could never find it on VHS or DVD for so long. So that's also the hope that Get Thrashed is not going to be, you know, $75 on eBay for a DVD. You can
right.
buy it for $10 on Amazon. So that's really the goal here, is just to make sure everybody who wants to see the film, who should see the film, they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by making it digital, here's me hoping that kids these days will pay attention to the great music, right? Because I get really sort of indignant about the musical choices of my nieces and nephews and soon to be my son. So maybe this will be a good push to those kiddos. So curious about the kind of the process of making the documentary. Like, when did you start this whole thing? Did you have a travel like all around the country or the world to interview all these artists? Because all the interviews in the film are so amazing. And it's so funny to see some of them that are so young, you know?
Yeah. You know, listen, as a thrash fan, I felt like in 2002 when I started that my music, thrash metal music, had never got the props it deserved. You know, so many other genres of music were having books written about them, films done about them, but I thought thrash was, you know, was overlooked. So I just said to myself, having worked at MTV for many years, I can do this. I can do it myself. I have a camera. I can go out there. I can edit. And what I really need is a good story. I need the ability to talk to these bands. And thanks to my background working at MTV, I knew a lot of the publicists, a lot of the bands, a lot of the label people. So they were very kind in hooking me up with the interviews. But literally, it was me, a camera, and release forms and lights, everything on my back. I would walk into these clubs and I would film and do it all by myself.
Wow.
And then eventually, you know, travel to San Francisco and LA and, you know, all across the country doing these interviews. On top of that, living in New York and very close to New York City, I had the advantage of every band plays here. So if I just waited long enough, I could get just about every artist.
Yeah, that's true.
Nice.
So over the course of like 5 years, that's what I did. I traveled a little bit or a lot and got the bands as they came through New York City. And we made a conscious choice, or it was out of necessity also, to basically not shoot them all in front of a black curtain or someplace, you know, standard.
Yeah.
They're all shot in different places, mainly because we had to.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, also, Rick, the other thing is I just want to give you props for is the way you edited and put it together. When I watched it, I was like, man, this is like an old episode of MTV's Headbangers Ball, but then you just dropped that, you know, your time at MTV. So is that kind of what helped you just stylize this, is with your time on Headbangers Ball?
Yeah, it's totally influenced by my time at Headbangers Ball and MTV and that style of cutting, that fast, hard, quick music stings, punch mm-hmm. you in the face, then move on to the next top. It's all because I was brought up in production at MTV and at Headbangers Ball.
Nice. Well, so now just looking back at the documentary, like what were just some of the highlight interviews for you? And like who provide like the most insight about thrash metal?
I think Dave Mustaine, you know, certainly is one of the stars of the film. Everybody mm-hmm. always says he has some of the best lines, the funniest lines. And
doesn't
Dave
he
has
always?
Never been one. Yeah, he's never been one to hold punches.
That's
as,
for sure.
As a filmmaker, you want that. And Dave was great. Blitz from Overkill was amazing in the same way, not pulling any punches. You know, Blitz's interview, it was one of the first I did for the film. He invited me over his house, and I remember him, you know, serving sandwiches and stuff in between takes, and yeah, anything to drink. He was so nice, you know. And then I remember Frank Bello. It was a great story. Frank Bello from Anthrax. He actually did the interview at my house because we lived in the same neighborhood in New York, and he came over, and I had a Chihuahua at the time that loves to bark, and I said, how am I going to keep this dog from barking during the interview? Okay, I've got these meds that I can give them, which during thunderstorms drums we could use to calm him down. And that's what I did. So he was certainly calm, but he was a little too calm. Frank kept looking down, and there's my dog kind of like humbling, stumbling around drunk during the interview.
That's hilarious. He was getting thrashed as well.
Yeah, he was totally trashed.
That's great. Was there anybody, any rock stars out there that you really had your heart set on interviewing that you weren't able to for whatever reason?
We ran out of time with, Tom Warrior from Celtic Frost. We're not able to get him. And then Mike Muir. Mike Muir politely declined. There were a lot of films going on at the time about punk, hardcore, and metal as well.
Okay.
And I think Mike just wanted to, he wasn't sure what was happening and just, again, politely declined.
Got it.
So would have loved to have his thoughts, but again, it wasn't like he said, no, way.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing, Rick, I was always just kind of curious is just for Chas and I, we talk a lot about music history on the air and whatnot, and I'm always amazed how different styles of genres of music these scenes start up in different parts of the country, you know, like Seattle grunge and so forth, and punk like in New York City and all that, and even LA and the hardcore scene there. But so what about the Bay Area? Why did the thrash metal scene really take off here in San Francisco?
I think in working on Get Thrash, each area where thrash sprouted up from needed fans who were into it, certainly bands to help create a scene. A record store certainly helped. You guys had that in the record vault, which Ron Quintana was running, and also a radio station. If you had those four elements, and San Francisco did, you had yourself the beginnings of a really cool scene. You had great bands, great fans, a record store, and a radio station. And there you go. You're off to the races. And again, San Francisco and the Bay Area basically had the best of all four of those, you know, in a lot of respects.
Yeah. A lot of this movie, I felt like was sort of a love letter to certainly a couple of people and bands. Metallica, number one. There's a lot of conversation about Metallica, and then Dave Mustaine as well. And part of me going back to kids these days, and Babe Huey and I are very invested in the local rock scene here. We look at new bands, we look at unsigned bands, we try to look at the underground scene and all of that. Do you think there's going to be another Metallica that comes around? You know, I mean, who do you think would even be the closest to somebody, a juggernaut like that, that would stick around and do what they did for that scene?
Wow, that's the toughest question I've been asked in 10 years.
Sorry about that. I'm not trying to be the Barbara Walters of thrash metal.
No, it's a great question. It's a hard question, but I hope the answer is not a downer, because it's almost impossible to imagine a band doing what Metallica did.
Mm-hmm. Kind of lightning in a bottle situation.
Yeah. It's just, in this day and age, it's so different. You know, there was, you know, I went to see Iron Maiden last night here in New York, and I'm just thinking, you know, the first time I went to see Metallica or Slayer, there was no YouTube. I had no idea what I was walking into, just like rumors of like, you know, what to expect.
Right.
So, you know, part of the mystique is gone. You know, when a band comes out, their first show, hopefully it's good, because that stuff is on the internet and it's all around the world, and people either like them, love them, hate them. They're either going to live or die, you know, by what they do every single day, every single show. Whereas I think Metallica in those days, you know, you had a chance to go to a club and maybe have a bad show and figure out who you are as an artist before the whole world jumped on and made determinations whether you're the next big thing or you should just go away.
That is such a great point.
Wow.
You were kind of able to hone your skills in front of your crowd, and then if you didn't get it right, you had another chance. That's such a valid point. And it's funny that you say that, because I'm a little pissed off because we're going to Roger Waters tomorrow night, and I've already seen like half the show on YouTube. I'm like, it's all ruined, you know?
The surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just, that's the thing. And so Chas and I, we always think about that. And I always wonder too, if you took like a time machine, we found Doc Brown and go back, back in the 80s, pick up all those bands, the great thrash bands, brought them back into present time. I always wonder if they could been as successful in today's music world, the way the music works as far as digital downloads and streaming. I just
record
wonder
labels and YouTube
I just wonder if they can make it today. Do you ever wonder about that? And do you think which bands could have maybe work in today's world?
That's again another great question, another tough one. You know, I want to give them the benefit of the doubt and say yes.
Yeah.
Because they were that good. It's almost like, you know, people now talk about the Golden State Warriors because they had beaten the Bulls. Well, it's a different era, different landscape, different style of play. It's really hard to compare the Bulls to the Warriors. I would say the same thing with Metallica and Exodus and all the bands that grew up back then. It's very difficult to compare because of the landscape. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. I think they're great bands, and that great bands will eventually find their fans, their market, and they'll find a way to rise above everything else that's out there. If there were thousands of bands they were competing against back then, you know, maybe there's tens of thousands now, but I think good music will still find its way to an audience, you know?
Absolutely. So Rick, the other thing is I really want to ask you this, because as someone who's also been really invested in thrash metal here in the Bay Area, and just kind of get your perspective on, since you're on the East Coast, is like, for me, I noticed back in like the mid-2000s, my observation was I felt like there was like a second wave of thrash metal bands forming and playing all over the Bay Area at Gilman and just a lot of underground warehouses that I went to. And some of them actually got big enough, they actually went on tour with the pre-established thrash bands from the 80s, which I thought that was kind of cool, go to a show and see young and older bands playing together. Do you agree that there was kind of like this second wave of thrash metal? And would you even maybe consider doing a documentary on those bands sometime in the future?
There definitely was. We were making Get Thrashed, and it was incredible to see these young kids, you know, that were 17 years old at the time, forming bands and wearing the same clothes and playing very similar styles of music. And like you said, opening for the bands, you know, if I named a few, you know, that I remember offhand, you know, Bonded by Blood, you know,
yes,
taken directly from Exodus, you know, Fueled by Fire, Evil. There were so many bands.
Warbringer, Municipal Ways, all those bands.
It was incredible to see that. It would be interesting to do, if I ever did a Get Thrash Part 2, that would be it. It would be how that thrash metal scene directly gave birth to. It was almost like it was literally their kids. I mean, they dressed the same way, looked the same way.
Yeah.
And in some ways sounded, you know, very similar, you know? So it was very, very interesting. I love the bands that take like thrash and do something a little bit different with it. One of my favorite bands these days is Avatar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love that they take elements of thrash and do things that are different with it. Mm-hmm. But I tell you something, for bands like we had just mentioned, that they just nailed the style. They took it to a slightly different level of intensity, and it was great to see. I'm smiling here just thinking about so many of those bands you just mentioned.
Nice.
Yeah, we actually just saw Avatar at Aftershock Festival last year.
Yeah.
I will admit I'm scared of clowns, so I had a little bit of an issue with that, but they were still really rad. So it's funny, last night as my husband and I were talking about this, we were naming so many bands that, you know, did well, especially here in the Bay Area or especially in New York or whatever, but didn't like make it. What do you think is the most underrated thrash metal band?
You know, I might say Violence.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Dude, we were rocking out last night and my husband knew every word. I was laughing my ass off. It was great. He would not let me Snapchat it, unfortunately.
They were just an unbelievable band, and you know, to understand Violence is to understand that's where, you know, Machine Head was born.
Right, there you go.
Absolutely.
Demo, so that's the early beginnings of Machine Head, but with a vocalist, Sean Killian, that was completely different than anybody
else.
Oh,
his vocals were insane. Since.
Yeah, and he also had the best shirt in Get Thrashed. He wore a shirt that said, you know, I neutered my cat and now he's French or something like that. I had people commenting on his shirt for like the first like 6 months of the movie. And also, just to tell you how important Violence was to me, you know, I only got to see them once here on the East Coast.
Okay.
But when they came through, they played in New York City the same night that Nirvana, just before Nevermind, came out. And I said to myself, this Nirvana, you know, the stuff I've heard is amazing.
Yeah.
I got to go see Violence, though. Violence is amazing.
That's epic. Oh, my God.
The only chance I had to see Nirvana, I passed on to see Violence in New York City.
Wow.
I think you made the right choice.
Yeah.
I love Violence, too.
I know, right?
Yeah, totally.
That's great.
The other thing I want to ask is, I'm just curious, it's a two-parter here. Did you go see the Big Four tour when that happened a few years ago? Just thoughts on that tour? And for me personally, I kind of wish they would have done more of a tour around the country. They just did like a handful of the big cities.
Yeah.
I was also hoping maybe they kind of would have turned that into a big festival and get all the big thrash bands Testament.
See, we were doing this last night too. We were like, we got to the big seven or big eight, like in no time. We're like, how do you narrow it down to the big four?
Or
you
even
know?
If they do like a second stage off to the side. Cause I went to the one down in Indio years ago at the Polo Grounds. So yeah, I just kind of, your thoughts on the whole big four tour and like, do you wish, I wish like a bigger tour would have came from that.
Right.
Yeah, I saw them at Yankee Stadium, and to sit there, you know, with whatever it was, 65,000 people watching these bands that at one point I was seeing in front of 65 people.
That's crazy.
It's almost like you're so proud of your kids for going on and graduating high school or college. You know, it was amazing to see how far it had come. So I was proud, and it was just like a moment to just kind of take it all in and enjoy it. Listen, I would love for there to be a bigger thrash fest. It seems like, you know, possibly, Metallica, Megadeth, maybe they could kind of put something like that together. But I guess what's replaced that is these big festivals that were, you know, originally so huge and so great and still are in Europe. But now they've kind of come over here to the States. So we get so many of these festivals, and a lot of them are heavy and rock oriented festivals. I think that that's probably what you're going to see, you know, more diversity than just the thrash bands. But listen, if somebody's willing to do, you know, the Big Eight Thrash Metal Festival,
that would be rad.
I'm there, they could show Get Thrashed, and I'll help in any way.
There you go.
Actually, Rick, you can't see me right now, but with your answer, I was throwing my hands up, yes, in agreement, because this is like just quick side notes. So all the interviews we've done recently, especially at these festivals here on the West Coast, we've asked a lot of these bands. Is we've noticed this big trend, like, you know, like for example, Mayhem Festival has come and gone. Even Ozfest was a tour that's come and gone. But we noticed instead this big trend of like these festivals popping up all over the country. But yes, the same observation I've always had is it's like they must have saw the success in Europe and overseas and brought it over here. So I'm so glad you brought that up. So I think that's something that's really been taken off, and which is a reminder to everyone listening, just go support bands, go see these festivals.
Yeah.
It's one true rare experience. You get to see all these great bands together. But kind of like a rapid fire right now, I just got a couple more questions for you. So kind of your first answer comes to mind. So what is the greatest thrash metal album?
Slayer, Rain and Blood.
Yeah, that's pretty much, that's like across the board, everybody says that, I think.
Okay, well, off that though, what is the greatest thrash band?
Oh, boy. You know what? If you're going to ask the greatest thrash band, I always ask, is it Influence? Is it album sold? Is it just my favorite?
I think your personal favorite. Together?
I would say that Exodus is a band that I would give that title to, just because one of the things that surprised me when I went to film in the Bay Area is the love for Exodus. And it made me realize that Exodus actually was there in the Bay Area before Metallica. They were there before Metallica. And some of their music, existed before really, you know, any other bands were doing thrash. So I give them a lot of credit. They're also a little bit underrated and overlooked. So let me just say Exodus.
And then also, what do you think is the best thrash song?
Oh, man. Is Slayer going to take the crown with Angel
of Death? I know, right?
Angel of Death? Okay. Yeah, totally. Nice. That scream and everything. Yes.
Yeah.
Scariest song of all time, I think.
it's certainly so hard to pick, but that song on that album is just, it's just, I don't know how you top it.
Perfect. Yeah.
Well, Rick, we always like to end our interviews with our favorite question. It comes from my favorite film, Almost Famous. I'm not sure if you're familiar, probably are.
Yes.
But in the last scene, the question is asked, what do you love about music? And we always ask this to all of our rock stars and now directors as well. So you can take a second if you need to. But yeah, what do you love about music?
I mean, music is the soundtrack to your life. You can think of a song and it takes you immediately back to the moment when you either heard that song or you had some special moment in your life. And it's, we talked jokingly about a time machine, but songs and music can do that. They take you back to a place, to a time, to a feeling, you know, that, in a lot of ways only exists in your head, and music helps bring you there, you know? So in a lot of ways, music is a time machine, you know? It sounds really like a corny science fiction interview, but it's not.
It's true,
really,
though.
It's a soundtrack to people's lives, and it's, it really is, so important in that respect that it can help you relive old memories, relive great times, and, you know, it's always there. You'll never forget these songs because they're so linked to moments in your life, and I think that's what's so important about music.
That's awesome. Well, I got goosebumps from
that. I know, I did too.
Rick, we could talk to you all day about
music.
This is really cool. But so we encourage everyone, go out and get Thrash, the story of thrash metal. It's out now, the re-release. So everywhere you can find it, you get on Amazon, digitally download it. So just go online. You can go to getthrash.com for more info. Also, so for listeners here in the Bay Area, we're going to be doing a special screening of it in our Levi's Lounge on June 20th. So if you go to 1077thebone.com on our contest page, you can enter to win for that. That's going to be a lot of fun as well. But Rick, from Chast and I, we just want to thank you again for making this documentary. As Chast mentioned earlier, it really is a love letter for thrash metal around the country, also, but specifically here in the Bay Area. So we just can't thank you enough for putting all the time and effort and mileage into this movie.
Oh, thank you guys for supporting the film and checking it out. It's always amazing when somebody's actually seen it and enjoyed it. It just makes my day. So
well, I was influencing my one-year-old son last night at dinner. I was watching it with him, and he loved it. He kept pointing at the screen and going, dad, because my husband is a rock drummer, a professional drummer. And so he kept going, dad, and my husband was like in tears.
That's great.
Okay. Start them young.
Exactly. You have to.
Awesome. Well, Rick, thank you so much again making the time today. We really appreciate it. Appreciate it, and good luck with the re-release of this documentary.
Thanks, guys. Thanks so much.
Have
awesome.
A good one.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.